Well, thank you for the invitation to speak today. It's very good to be here and share some of the recent work that I've done and others have done looking at the impact of entomopathogenic nematodes and viruses on the evolution of BT resistance by pest insects. And I think that among people who study entomopathogenic organisms, there's a generally held sentiment that these are greatly underused agents of biological control. Of course, there are some cases where they're applied successfully in a commercial setting, such as the use of Bavaria bassiana in greenhouse work and to control pests on ornamentals, and use of entomopathogenic nematodes to control Coleopteran larvae in turf grass. However, if one considers the entire array of studies that have done looking at potential applications of entomopathogens, this is just a small subset of the applications that could be used. And I want to build on that theme today and talk about a very new and exciting potential application of entomopathogenic organisms, and that's their role in bolstering resistance management for BT crops. And the specific topic that I want to develop today is that entomopathogenic viruses and nematodes show promise for slowing the evolution of resistance by agricultural pests to BT toxin. So to do this, I want to talk just a little bit about the threat of BT resistance, what some of the management options are, and then how entomopathogens can fit in to these current resistance plans and be used to delay resistance. And then I want to consider a few case studies. I want to begin by talking about my own work with entomopathogenic nematodes and BT-resistant pink bollworm. And from there, move to some work that's been done by Ben Raymond in England looking at the role of entomopathogenic viruses as slowing the evolution of resistance to BT in diamondback moth. And then draw some general conclusions from those studies. So the use of insect-resistant transgenic crops continues to increase, with corn and cotton expressing BT toxin covering 32 million hectares in 2006. As a result, some key agricultural pests are under strong selection to evolve resistance to BT. In North America, this includes the European corn borer, corn earworm, tobacco budworm, corn rootworm, and the pest that I've been working on, the pink bollworm, Pectinophaga sepiella, which we'll come back to in just a little while. Now, there are several factors or components of agricultural systems that can delay the evolution of resistance to BT toxin by pests. These include the concentration of toxin that's present within a crop, with higher concentrations of toxin making resistance a functionally recessive trait. In addition to that, planting of non-BT refuges can act to slow resistance. And finally, fitness costs of BT resistance will slow the evolution of resistance by pests. And what I want to focus on today, then, is why do fitness costs matter, and how might their benefit in terms of current resistance management strategies be maximized? So to understand the role of fitness costs, then, in managing resistance, one has to consider the high-dose refuge strategy that's currently in place in the U.S. and elsewhere to manage resistance. This involves planting a BT crop that expresses the toxin at a high concentration. So resistance is functionally recessive. Only the homozygous resistant individuals are going to survive on the BT crop. If these crops are planted in conjunction with a refuge that harbors a large population of susceptible pests, then any resistant individuals that emerge from the BT field are likely going to mate with these susceptible pests, producing heterozygous progeny that cannot survive on the BT crop. However, migration of resistant individuals into the refuge is going to lead to the accumulation of R alleles in this population and consequently break down this dynamic of susceptible individuals mating with resistant individuals, and eventually lead to resistance within the population. Fitness costs of BT resistance are going to act to remove resistance alleles from the refuge, consequently preserving the dynamic of the high-dose refuge strategy and maintaining susceptibility within the pest population. So what do I mean by fitness costs? For the purpose of this talk, we can define fitness costs simply as lower fitness of a resistant genotype compared to a susceptible genotype in the absence of the selective agent. And that could be any environmental factor at all, herbicides, insecticides. For the purpose of this talk, we're dealing specifically with Bt toxin. And a fundamental observation about fitness costs is that they can vary with environmental conditions. They don't have a set value. And I want to illustrate this point just by referring to some past work I've done looking at resistance to an herbicide, triazine, in the pigweed, Amaranthus hybridus. Now this is a species that grows very well in disturbed areas. It's an annual weed. It occurs commonly in agricultural fields. In cornfields, it's been traditionally controlled through the application of triazine herbicide, and many populations have evolved resistance to triazine. I ran an experiment in which I took triazine-susceptible and triazine-resistant genotypes, grew them out in the field in competitive arrays, and these plants were either isolated from herbivores or grown in the presence of this specialized leaf-feeding beetle. At the end of the season, I measured fitness by quantifying reproductive biomass. The thing to notice here is that when the genotypes grew in competition, triazine-susceptible plants had higher fitness than triazine-resistant plants, but the difference was not statistically significant. When the herbivores were introduced, the difference in fitness between the genotypes increased by about 360%, with triazine-susceptible plants having significantly greater fitness than triazine-resistant plants. So fitness costs can vary as a function of the interspecific interactions that are present within the environment. So how is this relevant then to resistance management in the context of the high-dose refuge strategy? The idea here is that we think about ecological interactions that are going to increase fitness costs. We can design refuges that are going to impose higher fitness costs and consequently be more effective at managing or preventing resistance. So I think it's very natural to ask then, is this a realistic strategy? Well, currently there's a growing body of literature pointing out that the host plant on which an herbivore feeds can act to magnify fitness costs. So a grower could potentially select certain plants for the refuges, which would make fitness costs greater and be more effective than at delaying resistance. But what about entomopathogens? So might these biological control agents enhance resistance management by preferentially killing Bt-resistant pests? So to consider this question, I'd like to talk first about work I've done recently with interactions between the pink bollworm and two species of entomopathogenic nematodes, Steinernema rio bravae, Heterorhabditis bacteriophora. So the pink bollworm, Pectinophaga sepiella, is a major pest of cotton in the southwestern U.S. and is currently controlled by planting of Bt varieties. This includes the first generation of Bt cotton, Bollgard cotton, that produces Cry1AC toxin, and more recently, the pest is being controlled through use of Bollgard 2, which produces Cry1AC and the Cry2AB toxin. I'm going to focus today on resistance to the first generation of Bt cotton, Cry1AC cotton. Now, in pink bollworm, resistance to Cry1AC is linked to mutations at a cadherin locus, and three known resistance alleles have been identified and named R1, R2, and R3. And this is an example of mode 1 resistance, where see reduced binding of the Cry1A toxin, high level of resistance, and also recessive inheritance of resistance. The way I went about addressing experimental question was to begin with populations that were collected at opposite ends of the state of Arizona and differed in their resistance allele profiles. I used exposure to Bt medium to generate homozygous resistant lines and used PCR-based detection of resistance alleles to generate lines that were susceptible to Bt. experiments were run by raising larvae to the final instar and using individuals that were in the wandering stage. So in the field, wandering larvae leave cotton balls and enter the soil to pupate. So they would be exposed to entomopathogens that are in the soil at that life history stage. And these wandering larvae then were treated with entomopathogenic nematodes in petri dishes lined with sterile sand. So for the first experiment, I was focusing on Steinernia maria brava, running 8 experimental blocks, exposing larvae to between 2 to 14 entomopathogenic nematodes, using 3 larvae at each concentration, along with 3 to 6 experimental controls. So the total sample size for this experiment was about 400 insects. What I'm showing here are the results. We have mortality corrected for control mortality on the y-axis, nematode concentration on the x-axis. Thing to notice is that there's a significant effect of insect genotype. At all nematode concentrations, except for the highest, where there was complete mortality, BT-resistant insects showed greater mortality than BT-susceptible insects. So nematodes are acting to magnify the fitness cost of BT resistance. Next, we wanted to consider whether there might be tritrophic consequences for this interaction. And so we added in the cotton phytochemical gossypol. This is a very ecologically important secondary metabolite that's produced by cotton, affects the growth and survival of pink bollworm, and also has been shown to impact fitness costs. Here we ran 2 separate experiments, again using Steinernia maria brava, also adding in Heterorhabditis bacteriophora, a couple nematode concentrations, 9 experimental blocks for each of these experiments. And so for each block, then, we're looking at all combinations of insect genotype, diet, and nematode concentration, and testing about 2,000 insects per experiment. So just quickly, then, the experimental design involved beginning with these 4 lines, making all possible interstrain crosses to generate 3 genotypes, raising the insects on diet with or without gossypol, challenging the wanderers with nematodes, and recording survival to adulthood. So these are the data for the experiment with Heterorhabditis bacteriophora. Again, I'm showing corrected mortality on the y-axis. X-axis, we have insects that were raised in the absence of gossypol or with gossypol present in the diet. 2 concentrations of nematodes, low and high, and then this is a key for the 3 insect genotypes. The thing to notice here is that although diet and nematode concentration had significant effects on mortality, insect genotype did not. So this nematode did not affect fitness costs of BT resistance. See a somewhat different outcome with Steinernia maria brava. The setup of the graph is exactly the same as before. Thing to notice here is there's a significant interaction between insect genotype and nematode concentration. No significant difference between SS and RS individuals, but RR individuals have significantly higher mortality than SS and RS, about 16% higher. So we're interested in what the population level consequences of this fitness cost might be. The way we addressed that was to take the mortality data from Steinernia maria brava and plug it into simulation model. This is a model that was developed by Mark Sisterson. The parameters are based on the biology of the pink bollworm, and it's a spatially explicit stochastic model. So each simulation has 100 fields, and life history parameters have a mean and a variance rather than fixed values. And in these simulations, then, we were varying whether or not nematode-induced fitness costs were present or absent in the refuges. If they're absent, there's no fitness cost of BT resistance. When they're present, we incorporated that 16% higher mortality for RR individuals. Then we vary the percentage of non-BT refuges from about 10 to 40%. These are results from simulations in which there were no nematodes present in the refuge. Time to resistance is shown on the y-axis, and we said a population was resistant if R allele frequency reached 0.5, and percent refuge is shown on the x-axis. So blue x's are the individual simulation runs, and the red dashed lines are the means. So as refuge size decreases, time to resistance increases, fastest resistance evolution we're seeing was an average around 20%, taking about 60 years at the highest percentage refuge. These are the data with the fitness costs imposed by Steiner, Niemer, Rio Bravo Incorporated. What you can see here is we found substantial delays in resistance with 25 to 40% refuge, showing no resistance evolution within the 100-year window that we're looking at these simulations, and still substantial delays even at the smaller refuge sizes. So in summary then, for the case of pink bollworm and entomopathogenic nematodes, what we're seeing here is that nematodes can act to increase the fitness cost of BT resistance, but these effects are variable. They're present for Steiner, Niemer, Rio Bravo, not for Heterorhabditis bacteriophora. There also may be influence of temperature on these nematode-imposed costs. I forgot to mention it, but the first experiment I showed where there were costs from 2 to 14 nematodes per larva, those were run at 20 degrees Celsius. The second experiment, we saw costs at the low concentration but not the high, those were run at 25 degrees Celsius. So temperature may influence the extent to which these costs are going to arise. And finally, work with simulation models supports the idea that the presence of nematodes in refuges can act to delay resistance evolution. So I think it's very natural to ask how general these effects are. Do they extend to other BT-resistant pests, other pathogens? And I'd like to talk just briefly about some work that's been done by Ben Raymond, who's now at University of Oxford. And he was looking at interactions between the diamondback moth and nuclear polyhedra virus. And here we're dealing with resistance to the BT spray, BT Kiyostaki, not just to a single toxin. And similar to my data, he found that entomopathogenic viruses can bolster BT resistance management. And this is a figure from one of his papers. I've recoded the symbols just to make them a little bit more visible. But what he did was he started with a single population that was resistant to BT. And what the y-axis shows here is the level of susceptibility. So as one goes down the axis, populations are becoming more resistant to BT. From this single population, he split it into five subgroups. One was exposed to plants, cabbage plants that were coated with virus, entomopathogenic virus, and BT toxin. Another in which there were BT-coated plants and virus-free refuge. Controls, which experienced no selection by BT. Plants that were coated in toxin and populations were propagated in the absence of any refuge. And finally, and most importantly, insects that were raised in an environment where there was BT-coated cabbage plus refuge cabbage, but the refuge plants were coated with virus. And what he found is that over generations, there was decreased susceptibility or increased resistance in three of these populations, but the controls and the insects that were raised with the virus-coated refuge were not significantly different from each other and showed significantly greater susceptibility to BT, significantly lower resistance than the other populations. So viruses in the refuge were acting to delay BT resistance. However, with viruses, the effects also appear to be variable and costs are not always observed. Here we have three populations and plotting susceptibility to viruses on the y-axis and susceptibility to BT on the x-axis. If viruses are increasing cost of BT resistance, there should be a negative association here, but you can see it's a straight line. And I think it's very natural to ask why this might be rising, some cases not others. In this experiment, the level of resistance ratio was around 50. In the previous experiment, it was over 3,000. So the level of resistance within the population may affect the extent to which fitness costs imposed by pathogens are going to arise. So just some general conclusions then. I think these studies do a nice job of illustrating the potential benefits that can arise from incorporating entomopathogens into BT cropping systems. Here we have a case where biological control agents can act to bolster resistance management. But as we've seen, these effects can be variable. So to design effective resistance management strategies then that incorporate entomopathogens, I think it's going to be necessary to consider both the specific pest and the pathogen that are going to be interacting. I want to thank some people that have put a lot of time into helping with these experiments, various agencies that have provided funding. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you.